We met Mike Greenberg. He answered some of our questions, and one thing that he suggested to us is, in this day and age, everybody should have a podcast. So we decided, let's do it.
Hi, this is Mike Greenberg from ESPN, and you're listening to the Elder 118 Sports Show.
We were there, we stormed the court. It was awesome.
We stormed the court, Henry.
Our favorite flaming pile of garbage, Henry, Arizona State. Julian Harrell, if you're listening, fascinating story. You're a cool dude.
Honestly, you talk about the NFL abusing cheerleaders, they would be the lucky ones in Cleveland because they'd be facing the crowd, not having to actually watch the football on the field, which just causes people so much pain.
Henry with future, the analytics revolution.
You know, we were giving Vegas the work.
I think they've adjusted
the wheels. Yeah, I think probably they've been listening to the podcast and they realized they needed to set better lines. Bo is here, Andrew Bowen the first. Welcome in, my man. Thanks. And surprise guest, Gabe Schmidtlein. And special guest, Daniel Vickers, straight from Asheville, North Carolina.
Mike Greenberg, welcome to the Elder 118 Sports Show.
We consistently put off other things to do this podcast. So if you are a listener and have been listening to day one, since day one, you are a real one. We appreciate you. We love you. The Elder 118 Sports Show is now viral at Elder 118 Sports on Twitter, Elder 118 Sports Show on Facebook, and of course, subscribe on the podcast app to get all those episodes delivered to you every Monday and every Friday. Hello, everybody, and welcome on into the Elder 118 Sports Show. I am your host, Parker Johnson, joined here, as always, by my co-host, Henry Ettinger. Fresh, or perhaps not so fresh, off a Dillo weekend here at Northwestern. Northwestern's annual big student-run concert. So that was a lot of fun. You can probably hear in my voice that I had a good time. I'm sure, Henry, you did as well.
I did. I don't know what you thought, but I enjoyed this year's Dillo better than last year's Dillo. I thought Young the Giant, the main headliner, nighttime headliner, surprised me with how good it was. I was not expecting that.
I'll be honest, I didn't tough it out for Young the Giant. I probably stayed for about the first third or half of their set. I don't know. I kind of lost track of time. But as soon as it started raining, I dipped. I was not about to sit there in the rain. It was cold.
I thought that was the best part. I mean, look, I enjoyed that.
I definitely got the vibe that, like, they were going to still play and, like, a lot of people were going to stay and just have fun and mess around in the rain. And, like, I respect it, man. I really respect it. But, dude, it was, like, 60 degrees and windy. And that rain started hitting, and it was so cold. I had to go. All my friends left, and I was like, yeah, I'm definitely coming with you guys. Like, this is just miserable. But I will say, overall, definitely agree. I really liked, especially Daniel Caesar, I thought was the best one.
Yeah, he was good.
In my opinion, Joey Badass was a lot of fun. Absolutely. It was a really good deal. It was a really good deal. But, of course, there were also some sports over the weekend. And so we're here to talk about them. Primarily, the NBA Finals. Obviously, we had Game 2 last night. So we'll break down everything that happened in that game. It is Monday. So, of course, we'll also start with a recap of the Pick 6. See how we did over the weekend. And then also, a news story that we didn't get to talk about on Friday that we wanted to bring up today. Is the fake Twitter accounts supposedly linked to Brian Colangelo? That's his first name?
Brian Colangelo,
the GM of the Sixers, and some tweets that he made from those accounts that were a bit strange and perhaps meddled in the affairs of the Sixers a bit. So we'll break down that story a little bit as well before we go, given that not quite as many juicy things to jump into this time about the NBA Finals as there were in our last episode. But let's get started, Henry. We'll start with a recap of that Pick 6 from the weekend. Here's what I did. I went back and looked at the first five games. Wild card will be looked at live. So we'll check the score of the wild card game live on the show. But as far as the first five games go, first one we picked was that Cavs-Warriors game. You picked the Cavs to cover the 12.5. I picked the Warriors. I got that one right. Able to pull away at the end, a little hot streak towards the end of that fourth quarter as the Cavs were kind of giving up towards the end. Really helped me get that cover. I was a little nervous about it because it was sitting at like 10 to 13 points for a while, and I was like, maybe I'll get it, maybe I won't. But the little push at the end definitely helped there. So Henry gets that one wrong, got that one right. We both picked the Capitals correctly. They won game 3 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. So that series is now 2-1 Caps. We both predicted that one, so we both got that one right. Sunday Night Baseball last night, Red Sox crushed the Astros. So Henry gets that one right. I got that one wrong. And then, Henry, I'm still a little befuddled as to this pick you made. But you picked Serena Williams to lose in the French Open. She did not. Do you have anything to say for yourself?
She lost a set in the round before and looked vulnerable. Then she wasn't as vulnerable, but now she's withdrawn with an arm injury, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sad part about it, is she did win this game and then had to withdraw from the tournament, as you said. Arm injury. I think I saw abdominal injury, maybe, even.
It's a pectoral injury, I believe, is that actually, like, right. Yeah, they said it's, like here. I don't know what. I mean,
yeah.
She, like, pulled something swinging. She, like, she can't swing a racket, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty...
It's a fundamental issue.
I would say a pectoral muscle is a pretty important muscle to have in tennis. So, definitely fair. And we know, given her track record, she would fight through it if she could. So, seems like Serena Williams did definitely take a knock there. But, hey, she won this one. So, your Julia Georges pick did not work out. So, I got that one right. You got that one wrong, Henry. And then we picked a little Women's College World Series. Henry, you're still undefeated in these softball picks. I don't know what you know that I don't know.
But I know nothing. That's
you got UCLA over Florida correct. They won 6-5. And so I got that one wrong. You got that one right. And essentially, heading into the final game of the pick six, which was a wild card game of the week, Zambia at Namibia in an international friendly, we are tied 3-2. So you can stay safe, Henry, that
thankfully
the lead in the pick six will not be taken away from you by this game. However, I could pick up a game on you if this game ended in a draw. So I'm pulling it up right now, and we're going to find out what the score of Zambia and Namibia was. For a refresher, Henry picked Zambia. I picked a draw in this game. Come on, ESPN app. I don't want to buy ESPN Plus. Also, can we talk about ESPN Plus? This has really ruined ESPN 3. As a little segue while I'm pulling up the score. That really frustrates me. I understand ESPN wants people to pay for their services. But that really frustrates me. As somebody who watches a lot of Rugby Sevens, and that was always on ESPN 3.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
And now
you've got
to pay $4.99 for Rugby Sevens. I'm kind of mad. I'm kind of mad.
That was not something that has truly affected my life that much. I'm not going to lie.
No, that's too bad. All right, Henry. There's some controversy here.
Uh-oh.
Because it depends on the way that you score the card here.
I'm very confused.
The game finished 0-0.
Okay.
So it was a draw. It is listed in the score as 0-0. However, for some reason, and I'm very unclear as to why, because this was an international friendly, they went to penalty kicks.
Oh my god, no.
And Zambia won on penalty kicks. So I think you got the pick right. I mean, according to the app, it was a draw, but Zambia won.
Wait, now I gotta look this up. Zambia,
yeah,
versus...
I mean, the odds that there's anything besides the score in this game card is minimal, but we can see. Zambia won 4-3 on penalties. I don't know if they went to overtime.
Oh, no, because there was something at stake here.
Ah.
It's a Zambia wins shootout to reach 2018 COSAFA Cup semifinal.
Interesting.
Let's
see, that's a misnomer then, because it was listed as an international friendly. And that sounds like it wasn't a friendly. But
yeah, that's exactly what happened.
What I'm seeing here is that, first of all, Namibia had a player named Dynamo Fredericks, which is an awesome name. And secondly, that the game only went 90 minutes, and then they went straight to penalty kicks. So that's pretty unusual. But I think that means you got it right, Henry. I mean, for sake of fairness, Zambia won.
Wow.
They had to determine a winner. Wow. Sounds like they got it in penalties.
Who knew so much would happen?
Hey, look, I'm known to pick good matchups in the wild card game of the week. I reached deep for this one. And it paid off. I think that was a pretty good pick. I think that was a pretty fun pick.
Whoa.
To make. I mean, it did a little more for me than perhaps the Women's College World Series did. I don't know. But, hey, looks like you got that one right. So that means you finished 4-2 on the week.
And I picked against the Warriors and Serena Williams. You know?
And those were your two losses. Like we have learned some lessons here.
Like I really had a chance.
Like that could have easily been a 6-0. So that means that you actually move to 500, which is pretty huge. 50-50-1. I'm a little unclear at how we got to those totals, because that is not an even number. But according to my probably wrong math, you're 50-50-1.
Yikes.
And I'm 46-54-1, which means I'm 4 games behind you after this week. Seems like I'm missing a game somewhere, but I'm very confident that I have the difference right. So regardless, you're up 4 games on me. And sitting at 500.
Yeah, we've had to pick 102 games, not 101.
Yeah.
Somehow.
But you know, whatever. This is a very unofficial system. So anyway, end result, Henry wins the week. Henry holds on to a 4-game lead heading into what will probably be the last pick 6 this Friday. So Henry, you're looking pretty good, my friend. You're looking pretty good. Let's move on. We'll talk about NBA Finals, Game 2. As the Warriors came out on top, 122-103 last night. Henry, kind of seems like we are where we thought we would be at this point. Warriors up 2-0. As we mentioned on Friday, seemed like it was going to be really tough for the Cavs to be able to come back after that kind of heart-wrenching Game 1 loss. And that kind of seemed like the diagnosis of this game. I mean, is that what you think coming off of the game last night?
I don't know how much of it really had to do with the Cavs' mentality as much as the Warriors just played better basketball. And I think that's what made the Game 1 loss so unfortunate. And we talked about that on the podcast as well, the last episode. Look, the Warriors are just a better team than the Cavaliers. I thought, like, the Cavaliers overall kind of brought their A-game on offense. Maybe not on defense. They probably could have done slightly better. But at the same time, they also just, like, don't really have the personnel to stop the Warriors. And, like, when the Warriors shoot the ball well, it's like, oh, well. And that's why in Game 1, when, you know, they didn't have their best game and Thompson was hurt and Durant was struggling and all these things were going right and they couldn't get the victory at the end, it really hurt because we saw what happens when both of these teams play at their peak level and it was not close.
No, it really wasn't. I mean, the scoreline stayed pretty close throughout most of the game, but the Warriors definitely deserved to win by that 20-point margin that it was at the end. They were pretty dynamic on offense. Steph Curry, 9 three-pointers in that game. He finished with 33 points. Broke the record for threes made in a finals game, breaking Ray Allen's record of 8, which he set in 2010. So Curry, I mean, Steph's really been leading the way for the Warriors. Durant struggled in Game 1. He was better in this game, but definitely not as assertive offensively as you see him at times. I mean, if the Warriors hang on here, is it looking like Curry is putting in a Finals MVP performance to you? This will be his first.
It seems pretty clear that it's going to be Curry to me. And I think a lot of this, frankly, is just dictated on the matchup. Because the Cavs are switching everything, they have a lot of guys who can guard Kevin Durant like reasonably well. Jeff Green does fine. LeBron does fine. George Hill can kind of get into him because George Hill is like a 6'10 wingspan. Nobody can guard Steph Curry on the Cavaliers. Just absolutely not. And every time they get a switch, they're just hunting Kevin Love. And look, Kevin Love's doing his best. Steph Curry only went 2-for-9 from inside 2-point range in this game. Kevin Love actually like did like a decent job getting him to drive. But the problem is, even when Kevin Love is like pressing up on it, Steph Curry and like trying to get Steph Curry to drive, he's so good at shooting off the dribble, he can just cross over, and he's just quicker than Kevin Love, and he can just shoot a 3 anyway. And it's kind of like, oh, man. And I don't see how that's going to stop anytime soon. So, yeah, I think he's going to be the Finals MVP.
Yeah, I mean, when Curry's on like that, like the shot that he made running back towards half court with the shot clock expiring, just took a couple steps back just to create some space, you know? Just,
yeah, that just was casual. Luck. He didn't want to do that.
Dude, I don't know. I think he switched that. I mean, that was pure.
Oh, he swished it, but he was saying he was trying to go to the basket, and, like, somebody got in his way. So then he had to, like, just dribble out of the three-point line and then, like, just toss it out.
Well, I know, but it's just, I guess the point I was making, rather, is you know, Steph Curry, I'll just take a couple steps back. I mean, who cares if that makes it a harder shot? Like, that's not a harder shot for me because I'm so good at shooting the ball. Swished it. And then, I mean, there was another three that he made in the corner that was an and one with Love following him. He kind of tried to expose Love off the dribble a little bit, decided against it, just did a little 1-2, I believe, with Klay Thompson, and then just buried a three from the corner with Kevin Love all over him.
His ability to... And there are other shooters that can do this, but Curry's the best I've seen at it. And the Warriors do a great job of when he gives the ball up, sprints to a spot, catches it, somehow sets his feet off of a dead sprint, and buries shots. I mean, he does it all the time, and it's like, it's unguardable. I mean, Kevin Love was attached to Steph Curry that entire play, and it was just like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, definitely was one of those Warriors performances where, and we see them a lot. I mean, sometimes we only see them for parts of games, but we really saw it for all of game two, where you just think, who can stop them? I mean, if they play like that, there just aren't a lot of teams in basketball that can guard that. I mean, they just have players who we literally haven't seen before. A 7-footer who can shoot threes, like Durant. Curry, who has probably the quickest release we've seen in a long, long time, probably since Ray Allen, and clearly broke his record in this game. I mean, it's just like it's players that just at times just seem so unguardable.
I think what really hurt the Cavaliers, too, in this game is Sean Livingston going 5-for-5. JaVale McGee, obviously, he finished around the rim. He was pretty much wide open on most of his plays, but you know, he still got to put them in. We've seen him not put those in before. And they just, like, they're trying to be situationally aware and help off the right people at the right times, but even when you do it and then they go make the shot anyway, it's like, ah, it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
You're seeing the class of the Warriors. Like, when they have all the four All-Stars on the floor, the Cavaliers just can't guard them. They just can't do it.
And the scary part about that, too, is that apparently Andre Iguodala might be coming back before the end of the series. Saw the report today, and seems like he'll be back in the lineup for the Warriors. I mean, we're just adding another name. I mean, that's a guy who won Finals MVP 3 years ago. That's insane. And they've been playing without him this whole time. At times, we thought that gave a little spot for the Cavs to attack, and it did, but they're going to get him back, too. I mean, at this point, Henry, is it going to be a sweep? I got to think it's going to be a sweep. Obviously, I'm sure you have more hope than I do for the Cavs, but, like, what's it going to take? I mean, I think it's very unlikely at this point the Cavs win a game.
I do, too, and it's funny. Everybody, like, around the nation today seems to still be saying, like, Warriors in five. Like, what exactly about the games have they watched where they're like, yeah, the Cavaliers are going to win one of these? Yeah. Like, everyone's like, the role players play better at home. The role players really didn't play that bad in game two, offensively at least. I mean, like, George Hill had 15 points. Kevin Love had 22. I mean, Kevin Love could have shot slightly better from three. He was, like, 2-for-8. So, I mean, he could have made one or two more. JR was okay on offense. He was horrible on defense. But, like, he just can't really guard Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. We've figured that part out so far. Like, on offense, I thought the Cavs role players were kind of fine. Like, I don't really know what else the Cavaliers are going to do other than hopefully force, you know, Warriors role players to shoot more. But if Andre Iguodala comes back, that's, like, not as good of a strategy anymore. It just got a lot harder. So, I don't really know what is inspiring confidence for people other than LeBron is LeBron and, like, the Warriors take games off. But, like, I don't see how the Cavaliers are going to beat this team. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, things can change when you switch places in a series, too. I mean, obviously, this will be headed back to Cleveland. And I think that makes a difference. That being said, though, I really just don't see it right now from the Cavs. And I hate to ask this, Henry, but we kind of have to. Did LeBron do enough in this game? 29, 9, and 13? I was talking to somebody about this, and they're saying, you know, like, he makes that stat line look so pedestrian when that's, like, basically a 30-point triple-double, which is an absurdly good game to have. But, I mean, it almost felt like it wasn't enough.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Cavaliers people were joking about the fact that LeBron actually shot a better percentage from the field than Steph Curry did in this game, even though Steph Curry was being given all the praise. Look, did LeBron do enough? That's a tough question to ask in general, just because the Warriors in this game just did a better job not allowing LeBron to score so many points, especially early. Every time they ran a pick and roll, they just doubled LeBron off the pick and roll and forced Cavaliers role players to make shots, which they did at, like, an okay level. As I said, I thought the role players played fine. But, like, they're just not LeBron James. And you really see, like, the absence of another, like, star where, like, the Warriors just have, like, an absolute disrespect for the Cavaliers role players. Like, they were just like, we would rather double LeBron James and leave J.R. Smith wide open for a corner three or George Hill or Kevin Love. And we just know that they're not going to be good enough at that to win the game. And LeBron, I mean, I don't, like, you could say that LeBron could have, like, tried to drive through the double teams more. Like, he split them every once in a while and things of that nature. But, like, the Warriors, they're both a physically capable and mentally capable basketball team who, after watching LeBron score 51 points in the first game, were just like, we're not going to let that happen again. We're not that dumb. Like, we're just not going to let that happen. And so they didn't. And he had 13 assists, I mean, and probably could have had a couple more. And I don't know what else he could do, honestly. But, yeah, I don't know what adjustments there are for LeBron to make at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing you can hope is that he just finds a way to get some rest. I mean, that's the thing I'm worried about at this point with LeBron. Like, this is just taking so much out of him. You can tell he's so tired. And I think I saw a video on Twitter right before I came here, and it was this, like, uncut footage of from, like, one of the stadium cameras of the Cavs bench right after the play that happened in game one where J.R. Smith forgot the score before they went to overtime. And you can see them walk back to the bench. First of all, it's just silent. Nobody's really talking to J.R. Nobody's really talking to each other. LeBron is sitting a couple seats down from J.R. And at one point, Ty Lue comes up to J.R. and he says, or to LeBron, pardon me, and he says, yeah, like, we had a timeout left, apparently. At the end of the clock there when JR had the ball. And LeBron just put his hands, it just his face in his hands. Like, he was just like, he looked so defeated in that moment. And I know that, you know, you say, like, oh, maybe, like, it's not as big of a mental challenge, it's just the Warriors playing well. But I feel like between that just mental fatigue of, like, wow, I did so much and we couldn't win, and then the literal physical fatigue of all the miles that have been on his body, all the plays he has to run. I mean, he's out there guarding Sean Livingston on defense because he literally has to use so much energy on offense and be the main weapon and the man who makes everything happen for so many plays for the Cavaliers. It just, I feel bad for him at this point. I think the only hope is that he can, I mean, maybe he's more comfortable at home. He can rest up a little bit. There's a few more days between the games to get the travel day. I mean, maybe that helps LeBron come out strong in game three. Because I will say, if they could win game three, we're going to be talking a lot differently about this series than we are right now. Don't you think?
I don't know really if we would. I feel like if the Cavaliers win game three, it'll probably be a combination of the Warriors taking their foot off the gas and, like, the role players coming alive. I feel like most people's expectations would still be Warriors in five. Maybe that's just me. The thing I'm almost impressed with LeBron is, like, that he continues to throw the ball to the open player. To me, at some point, I would think you'd just get frustrated with him missing shots. And he's even shown a willingness to, you know, put some effort in on D, switching on to Curry and Durant in this series. And all that being said, it just hasn't been a whole lot. And I don't know what the it's kind of, it's a hopeless situation for a little bit right now, which is tough.
Yeah. Unfortunately, at this point, we are left with more questions than we have answers. So we might as well just move on to a different topic, as the Warriors are up 2-0 and looking pretty good. But on to a team that is out of the playoffs, but that was in going pretty far in the East, that being the Sixers. And big scandal came out this week about Brian Colangelo, the GM of the Sixers, essentially having fake Twitter accounts where he tweeted a lot of things. Most notably, I would say, I mean, a lot of them were just kind of about the Sixers in general. But most notably, he really trashed Sam Hinkie, the previous GM of the Sixers, and Jahlil Okafor, kind of, you know, acting as if he's a fan who really wants Okafor out, which I think clearly as a member of now the Sixers front office is you would consider that being very, very unprofessional and even, I don't know, like, kind of like some sabotage, honestly. As far as the Sixers are concerned, I mean, how seriously did you take this story, Henry? Because I think it's kind of a funny story to joke about, but, like, it's pretty serious stuff that he was doing.
It was, and, well, it's unproven if it was him. And that's, I guess, the question is, it's somebody with it, you know, who's got intimate knowledge of the Sixers organization. That much has been is clear. And so the idea of it really being somebody setting up Colangelo has pretty much been disproven at this point. There's just probably no way that's true. But that being said, I think there's some pretty serious things in here. Releasing a medical report of Jahlil Okafor, supposedly he's out there. He said that Joel Embiid is not the star player of the franchise. It's Ben Simmons, and that they should just ride Embiid as a workhorse until he can give no more, and they can unload him to somebody else. I mean, yeah, that's like... Those are things that have tangible impacts on the team and are out there. And also, like, tweeting at reporters and stuff. I mean, a lot of weird stuff. And I think some people are, looking at it humorously, but it's a little bit comical that, like, a GM would be this unprofessional, I think, on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody close to the GM. But as I just pointed out, I think there are some real impacts on this that are significant, and the Sixers are going to have to deal with.
Yeah, no, there definitely are. It's a weird situation because, I mean, he's currently the GM. Like, it kind of a lot of stuff goes up to him, and this is going to have to be an internal investigation that the Sixers are doing now. There was an investigative piece in The Ringer, a really long article that was about this because essentially... The Ringer got DM'd some of these tweets and some of the evidence that they essentially put forth to saying that this was Colangelo of, I think it was 6 different Twitter accounts. And essentially, the person who gave them the tip said, yeah, like, these all look the same to me. There are linguistic similarities in the tweets, in the way that the tweets were worded across those different accounts. And also, I mean, some of the stuff is just kind of hard to deny. Like, if you're Colangelo, there's one response that I thought was the funniest of them all. In there's a picture of Colangelo that somebody posted on Twitter, and it was like, what is he doing with this collar on his shirt? And he tweeted back and I'm like, hey, that's a normal collar. Can we pick a different angle to attack the Sixers at? Like, why would anybody else have any reason to tweet that? I don't know. I think that one, like, kind of gives it away for me.
Yeah, I think the only, you know, the other plausible explanations, people first thought his son, who it turns out probably can't be linked to at least some of the accounts. There's really 3 main ones people are looking at this point. Other than one that Colangelo admitted to using, but hadn't tweeted out anything. The issue with those 3 accounts is they had tweeted while his son was playing college basketball games. So couldn't have been his son. It seems like the only thing is one of them, it came out recently, they believe is actually linked to his wife as opposed to him.
Interesting.
But like, I mean, and we can get into this, I guess. And I can ask this question cause I was the one who put it on the rundown. So if it's his wife instead of him for all of these accounts, you know, because, I mean, that's conceivable, defending the collar. You know, his wife probably brought the shirt for him.
I suppose. Yeah.
And all of these. Is it still, like, should he still be fired?
Yeah. I would say yes. I mean, look, I think, first of all, I would say, even if an account is linked to his wife, I still think there's a good chance it could have been him tweeting from it. Like, it could be, like, her phone number or, like, her email that was on the account, and you could say it was linked to her. But you really don't have any evidence of who's tweeting from what account. And given the fact that dude who provided the tip, like, cross-referenced the Twitter accounts and noted a linguistic similarity. I mean, I guess, you know, if you're married to someone, I'm sure that you pick up some similar phrases and traits and things like that, like you do with your friends. But I think at that point, it suggested to me that all the accounts were ran by the same person. So I don't really think that's true. However, if it were true, yeah, I still think you should be fired for that. I mean, that's just... a horrible use of social media. I mean, at that point, tell your wife, like, hey, we can't be doing this. Like, I'm the GM. We can't be running fake accounts. Like, we've seen what happened to Kevin Durant. We've seen what happened to Steve Kerr. Like, let's tone this down a little bit. Let's cancel these accounts. And it sounds like he already admitted to having that one account that basically he just used to monitor what was happening. He followed some Philly accounts, just like Philly sports accounts. He followed some Philadelphia journalists. Some beat writers, he followed, players in the Sixers organization, staff in the Sixers organization, former coach of his son's team, like some random people, but it was essentially just to keep tabs on what they were tweeting. He never tweeted from it. That is defensible to me. This, though, tweeting things that are, like, pretty sensitive to the franchise, like Jahlil Okafor's medical records, that's serious. I would fire him. And I don't think it would be a particularly tough decision.
I think he has to go no matter what, because even if you get into the question of does he deserve to, if all the accounts were his wife, let's say. And I think the reason they think at least one is because she was, there are tweets like when he was doing press conferences and stuff. So his wife at least had to have access. Doesn't mean it's her account anyway. We can throw that out there. But even so, let's not pretend like his wife is just getting these opinions about Sixers players from her, from her own knowledge with no discussions from, you know, her husband. Like, at the very least, he has to be influencing her in her thoughts. And how is she getting, like, the medical report? Like, even if she has it, she shouldn't have it. And regardless, I think the damage done, it doesn't matter whether or not it was his wife or him. I think the trust between him and particularly Joel Embiid, who's already said, if this was him, this is really bad. I mean, to me, the damage done there means that this guy just can't be her GM. He just can't. If he's going to have this poor of a relationship with your best player that's broadcasted to the world, you cannot be the GM of an NBA team. They got to go in another direction, which is a horrible timing because the draft is in a couple weeks and free agency is in less than a month. So this did not come out at the right time for the Sixers.
Yeah, that's definitely the toughest part about this. I mean, and look, assuming the Cavs lose the finals, which we clearly seem to be in agreement that is the most likely outcome here. I mean, people were naming Philadelphia as a potential destination for LeBron. If I'm LeBron, this definitely changes my opinion. I mean, yeah, if they hire somebody new, then perhaps that kind of gets cleaned out and maybe you start fresh there. That being said, as far as at least now is considered, the fact that this happened in the Philly organization and that nobody was aware of it, that nobody was able to shut it down, that the GM did this and felt no repercussions and felt fine doing that, that would concern me if I'm LeBron and I'm thinking about changing teams. You know, not that he has the best relationship with the Cavs front office, but they've at least supported him, and as we've said it before, and he's been there and he understands the culture around the Cavs. If I'm LeBron, that's not exactly the first place I would want to move to.
I agree, and I think there's a key distinction here between the Cavs and the Sixers, is the bad relationship LeBron has is with the owner, which really doesn't come around as much depending on how much your owner is involved. Like, you don't have to interact with them. LeBron is most certainly having conversations with the Cavaliers GM very frequently. You know, people joke about him being the GM. He may not be the GM, but there's a lot of consulting that's going on.
He's on every conference call, though.
And like, they talk about the trades and things of that nature, and Brian Windhorst reports this all the time. Like, he knows about everything that's going on, at the very least. And you have to interact with him. You do not with the owner. And so if he goes to the 76ers, like, you're going to have to, like, LeBron is going to interact with that GM. And so, I don't know. To me, this would hurt Philly. You know, some people have suggested they could fire him and hire David Griffin, because LeBron loved David Griffin. And Kobe Altman, the current Cavs GM, is a disciple of David Griffin, and they say LeBron gets along pretty well with him. I don't know if really that would make the biggest impact on LeBron's decision. Like, I don't think he's choosing his place based on the GM, but that's one option, I suppose. But yeah, I think this has to hurt Philly's chances. I didn't think Philly's chances were great to begin with, but Vegas disagrees with me. Vegas had them as the number one option, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it might be a different conversation for a different day in terms of where LeBron may be headed, but the more and more that I start to think about it, I kind of don't see LeBron leaving. I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's this whole mess with Philly, but just in general, I don't know that the allure of Philly is enough to say this team will definitively be better and get me further and have a better chance of me winning the finals than the Cavs. I think they're a better team, but does that move guarantee that he's going to win the finals? I don't think so. Does it guarantee that he'll compete in the finals? I don't think so. And is that worth moving for him? I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not LeBron, but that's kind of the way I see it. I think, you know, if it was Houston, that would be a different story, but I really don't think LeBron will move to the West. I really don't.
I mean, I'll give my brief notes on this because we probably won't have time, you know, to discuss it when it's going on.
Sure.
There are basically three logical places LeBron could go that we can see right now besides Cleveland. Philly, L.A., Houston. Philly, to me, I've never understood because of the fit with Ben Simmons. I just don't know how that would work. They say LeBron wants to play off the ball more. That's just not going to happen. And even if he did, look, he's not a great off-the-ball player. Joel Embiid, not a great, you know, shooter from three-point range yet. So that would just be, to me, it would be a disaster fit. Number two is Houston. I have no idea how Houston could do this money-wise. They can jiggling some things around, but it would probably require Chris Paul to take a pay cut, which he's never going to do because he's the president of the NBA Players Association. And if he doesn't do that and they sign Harden, LeBron, and Paul, they basically have to get rid of everybody else that's relevant to the team. Clint Capella would probably have to go. Eric Gordon would have to go. And they basically have no assets because to get rid of those contracts would require giving up a lot of first-round picks along with it to get people to take that kind of money. I don't see how that could really work. If they could fit it money-wise, that would make sense to me from a basketball perspective. I think that team would compete very well. If LeBron took a major discount or Chris Paul did or something, that seems very unlikely. LeBron said he never wants to take a discount. The only place I think is L.A., and I understand that right now L.A., even with LeBron and Paul George, probably does not have nearly enough to compete for a championship. But they do have a lot of assets. They've got young players. They've got draft picks, including one the Cavs gave them. So that's the only thing I could see is he goes with Magic Johnson and he says, you make all these trades. We can finesse Kawhi Leonard in here. We can find, you know, some other, maybe not quite as big of a star, but a third, you know, piece with me and George. And, you know, we somehow keep Brandon Ingram or something like that. And we've got, you know, a real team. But that being said, I kind of think Cleveland, if they can trade the number 8 pick for somebody decent, might be his best bet.
I think so, too, because if it's really down to staying in Cleveland or going to the Lakers, assuming that Philly and Houston are off the board, because, again, I agree that L.A. seems to me to be the most reasonable location given the chances that it actually could happen, because both Philly and Houston would have to move around a lot of pieces. I just really don't think that the players L.A. has are any better than the Cavs, and so if the Cavs can even improve their roster a little bit, I mean, yeah, as you said, you know, if they go on splash on multiple free agents, then clearly it'll be a different team. But I just don't know. I just kind of think the window is going to keep closing and the available teams are going to keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And at the end of the day, I think LeBron's going to return to Cleveland. It's a hot take, but it's kind of how I'm thinking about it. I don't know. Of course, there will be a lot more of that to come. Especially at the conclusion of the finals, assuming it goes the way we think it will. But we did want to get that little fake Twitter account story in. You know, I remember speaking on this podcast a while ago when the Kevin Durant thing was going on, and we said, hey, like, I mean, there could be like 25% of NBA players that have fake Twitter. Apparently that extends to GMs as well. I don't know. But Colangelo is certainly in some hot water there. We'll see what happens with the Sixers. That's all we got for today. I know you got to run to class, Henry. So we'll wrap it on up. But last episode of the year coming on Friday. I leave to LA on Saturday. So that'll be my last day on campus. So that'll be our last episode. So definitely stay tuned for that. We're really excited. I'll definitely put some more prep work into that. It'll be a really good episode. I promise. It'll be a lot of fun. And we will love to have you back for that. So until then, may your teams win, may your rivals lose, and may the sports be with you.